I think the fact that we've made investments like this has helped enormously over the last 14 years to try to create, well, we have created a balanced budget every year because we've had this income to put back into things like children's social care, adult social care. We've managed to keep libraries open in Warrington that have been closed by many, many authorities because of austerity. And I think, had we not had this income from these investments, we wouldn't have been able to do a lot of those things.
The era of global warming has ended. The era of global boiling has arrived.
The cost of renewable technologies, wind turbines, solar panels, batteries, have been falling far quicker than anyone expected.
We currently have about 7,000 kilometres of long-distance transmission network in place. We need to add another 4,000 kilometres.
You're proving simultaneously that it is the best job creator when you go green.
We want food security. We don't want to swap that for energy security.
What happens next is up to every one of us.
In this episode of Road to Zero, I want to find out if the UK's local authorities could use renewable energy as a means of generating alternative income and protecting vital public services. Local authorities, like other UK public and commercial enterprises, are obliged to meet the country's net zero targets. The big problem is that they have to do this when they're under huge financial pressure as a result of the cuts that have taken place since 2010 in UK central government funding. Now, when it comes to renewable energy projects, the main focus of local authorities is to consider planning applications for projects such as solar farms where the potential benefits go elsewhere. But is there an alternative approach they might consider? What I'm thinking here is, could they develop their own renewable energy facilities for the benefit of the local community? Perhaps a bit far-fetched, you might think. Well, to start my investigation, I'm in northwest England to talk to Councillor Janet Henshaw of Warrington Borough Council. Janet is Warrington's deputy leader and cabinet member for sustainability and climate change, and I want to know more about the council's innovative approach to renewable energy investment. The council's strategy involves investing in solar farms, three to date near Hull, York and Cirencester. Cirencester also includes a large battery storage facility. The cash generated by these investments is used in two main ways. Firstly, to help reduce local fuel poverty and to fund green measures such as an electric bus fleet, solar panels on domestic rooftops, and electric vehicle charging stations for those living in flats and terraced houses. But secondly, and perhaps more importantly, the solar farm income has helped avoid deep cuts in public services. According to the council, not only has it balanced its budget, but it's also managed to continue funding vital services like adult and children's social care and to keep local libraries open. These are areas many UK local authorities have been forced by austerity to cut right back or even close altogether. To date, few local authorities have followed Warrington's lead, but efforts are being made to share the experience. So, without further ado, let's meet Janet Henshaw and let her explain how one UK council is steering a different course to net zero and at the same time helping to maintain public services. Welcome to Road to Zero podcast, Janet, and many thanks for your time today. Can you briefly tell me about yourself and your role at Warrington Borough Council?
Yes, thank you, Ian. I was elected onto the council for the first time in 2021. And I was invited onto the cabinet a year later with a new portfolio for sustainability and climate change. I take a passionate interest in the environment and have met with a number of primary school children whilst I've had this role. They will be the generation that has to deal with climate change, and listening to their ideas really motivates me. I'm now the deputy leader of Warrington Borough Council, and housing has also been added to my portfolio. However, I still remain committed to climate change issues.
Tell me about your interaction with children when it comes to climate change. What do they think about climate change, do you find?
I think primary school children in particular are very concerned about it. I've made the effort to go to meet some of these children in primary schools, made arrangements with their head teachers, and sat down with groups of children who have their own committees for climate change and sustainability, have their own action plans, and really wanted to tell me about it. They're very concerned about the environment and the way they think that people are ruining their planet. And they've told me, a number of them, that adults need to sit up and take notice.
That's very interesting. Maybe we could return to that at some point in the future. Anyway, I'd like to start by getting a general overview of Warrington Borough Council's strategy of investing in renewable energy. What in general terms are the aims and objectives of this strategy, and how and when did it come about in the first place?
Yes, okay. Well, the strategy has been a kind of iterative process, really, over more than 10 years. The first project was one to reduce fuel poverty in the town by installing solar panels on more than 600 former council houses at the height of the feed-in tariff, with a further 1,000 plus properties. After that, the project was funded by the tenants signing over the feed-in tariff to the council, and then they benefited from free energy and the income from selling the unused generation back to the grid. The next project then was to install solar panels on a commercial warehouse. That was the first local authority funded commercial installation, funded by selling the energy to the occupier via a private wire. During the commercial unit project, the council made significant returns investing in solar bonds for a short period of time. The next natural progression was to move on to solar farms.
Right. Now, Warrington Borough Council declared a climate emergency in 2019 and pledged its commitment to be a net zero carbon organisation by 2030. How does your strategy of investing in renewable energy fit into this commitment?
Yes, indeed we did. We're committed to reducing emissions from our own operations, whilst also supporting the wider borough to be net zero and climate resilient as well. Our renewable energy investments are only just an example of many actions we're taking to address the climate emergency, but they showcase our bold and innovative approach to tackling this challenge. We've invested in solar panels on a number of our own buildings, including the council's main offices, to help reduce the carbon impact of our own electricity use. We've also invested in a number of projects to help our residents in the borough access low carbon electricity. For example, we installed solar panels on 1,600 social housing units and have recently facilitated a group buying solar panel scheme for residents, something I've actually taken advantage of myself. Our ambitious solar farm investments bring a direct benefit back to Warrington through the income that's generated, and that's then reinvested in local services and community energy projects.
That's all very interesting, thank you. Now, in broad terms, have the reductions that have taken place in central government funding for local authorities, especially since 2010, have these been in any way influential in the development of your strategy of investing in renewable energy?
Yes, most definitely. There's no long-term funding for issues like climate change. We have to compete with other local authorities for one-off grants, and we often have to match fund these. And more recently, we're having to reject these match funding grants due to the pressure on our wider budget and curtail our borrowing due to the high interest rate environment. So it does have quite an impact on the things that we're able to do. I don't think we're the only local authority in this position.
Right. Now, where did you actually get your original funding from to get this strategy off the ground? I think you said that this strategy is a major capital investment and part of the council's innovative Invest to Save model. Can you say how big a capital investment is involved and explain what the Invest to Save model is and how it works?
Okay, well, the funding for solar projects to date has come from the Public Works Loan Board and £1 million community bond as part funding for the Cirencester Solar Farm, which is our bigger solar farm and one that has really massive battery storage. So that is the investment that we're putting in to make the savings that we need to make.
On the face of it, this appears to be a very novel and innovative strategy for a local authority to adopt. It's the sort of thing you might associate more with California under the governorship of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Can you say a little bit about who originally advised Warrington Council on this strategy?
Yes. Strangely, we didn't have anyone advising us on how we got to where we are now. It's been really a progression for the council over, as I say, more than 10 years. As I said, you know, we started off doing a project installing solar panels on residential former council house properties. Then we moved on to commercial roof installation. And in fact, Warrington became the very first council to finance a commercial installation, selling the generation to the company in the large unit. Then the council invested in solar bonds, as I've said. That made a good return, so then we moved into solar farms.
Right, OK. Now, currently the strategy involves investments in three solar farms, I believe, in Hull, York, and most recently in Cirencester. How did these particular investments come about?
Well, the solar farm investments was the next stage, as I say, in our renewable generation path. Initial contact with GridServe came following an EV charging seminar in London, and this was followed up with a meeting with GridServe where we discussed our renewable energy and our EV charging plans. At that time, GridServe had two what I'd call shovel-ready hybrid solar projects that they were looking to develop at York and Hull, and this fitted into our renewal energy strategy. So we agreed to acquire the completed sites from GridServe, York Solar, Hull Solar, and more. The Cirencester project we'd considered right back in 2017, but it didn't come to fruition initially. GridServe bought the development rights and offered the site to us. Under this deal, the council provided the development finance, unlike York and Hull, where we acquired the completed final asset. So the council took ownership in September 2022. And I have to say, the Cirencester project is really the first of its kind in the UK because of the massive battery storage that comes with it and the deals that Cirencester actually has through GridServe with the National Grid.
Yeah, how big is the battery storage facility at Cirencester? The thing that sets it apart from your other solar farms, as you say.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you the exact size. All I can tell you about is what I've seen, and I've never seen anything like it. It takes up a really good part of the farm, and requires extra staff to maintain the batteries, keep them clean, and check the working all the time. So it's a very good investment.
Now, you've spoken about your relationship with GridServe and how you met them, but it seems a very close relationship and a good one. How do you see it evolving in the future?
The three solar farm investments are all separate, independent companies. But are wholly owned by the council. Each solar farm company has an operational management and maintenance contract with GridServe's operational management and maintenance, if you see what I mean. GridServe no longer do third-party solar projects. Their main operations are concentrated on developing EV forecourts. Future relationships outside of these contracts could be through the potential development of EV forecourt type facilities within Warrington.
Right, that's it. That's an interesting one, forecourts. I'll come to that later on. Now, moving on, I'd like to explore in more detail how your renewable energy investment strategy benefits your own local community, the people who live in the borough of Warrington. Now, you say the solar farms you've invested in are aimed at securing Warrington Borough Council's energy supply, giving the local authority control over its energy prices, contributing to reducing fuel poverty, and generating an operating surplus which can be invested back into the most important frontline council services. Have these aims been fulfilled, and how do you measure the success of this if they have? What are the key successes to date, for example, in the reduction of fuel poverty in Warrington Borough?
Well, the very initial solar array installation, which was the project I explained on the residential properties, that was a project wholly intended to reduce fuel poverty. So it was in some of the poorer areas of the town. The initial rollout was for over 600 properties, which increased to over 1,000. And staff actually went to meet residents on a fairly regular basis to check on reductions in bills and whether this was helpful. The people found it very, very helpful and saw quite significant differences in fuel bills. And then the solar farm investments, they don't just contribute clean energy to the UK grid, but also provide the income back to the council to reinvest in local services and community energy projects. A portion of the income generated each year is administered to Warrington Community Energy. This is someone we're in partnership with to provide support for households locally to reduce food poverty, improve energy efficiency and transition towards renewable energy. Warrington Community Energy is a charitable organisation that we work very well with in Warrington to be able to do this.
Following on from this and looking at some examples, I think you said that electricity generated by the Cirencester solar and battery farm facility will be used to help provide power for Warrington's fleet of all electric buses, which I believe are coming later this year. I think you said that the York Hybrid Solar Farm is providing power, which can be sold into the grid, and that the Hull investment is supplying all of the council's electricity needs, making Warrington Borough Council be the first local authority in the UK to produce its own electricity. I think that's correct. So can you tell me more about these particular examples, starting with Cirencester and the proposed fleet of electric buses?
Thank you, yes. So Cirencester is what we call the hybrid solar farm because of the battery storage.
Ah, right, okay.
We've been successful with bids for this funding for the electric buses. They're known as Zebra funded. And actually there's a launch of the new bus station tomorrow. And that funding was for the complete replacement of Warrington's own buses fleet with electric buses. As part of that submission, the council drew a link to Cirencester Solar Farm. So that means the new electric buses would be powered by renewable energy, and it was part of the bid. Although there isn't a physical link, obviously, there's no cable from Cirencester to the bus station. The link is via energy contracts. The solar farm sells all the generated power, and they sell that to a company called Statcraft, who then pass that on to their wholly owned energy company, Brit Energy. Warrington's own buses contract with Brit Energy for the power to run the electric fleet, because Brit only deal in renewable energy. The generation evidence is via renewable energy guarantees certificates, REGO certificates they're called. York Hybrid Solar Farm has twofold objective. There's a financial investment by the council to generate a return for the council from the sale of generated energy from the solar farm, and grid support income from the BESS. Secondly, the solar farm is contributing to the government's drive to net zero by 2050, because the government has obviously a different target date than the council. Hull Hybrid Solar Farm is the development being linked to the council's own energy consumption. The reason for the project, as outlined in the committee approval, was for the solar farm company to sell the green energy direct to the council, thus enabling the council to say that they are 100% green for electricity. However, following further review, the solar farm company was set up as a generator, not as an energy services company able to sell to energy consumers. So the power generated by the solar farm is part of a contract with an energy off-taker that produces 100% of the power generated by the solar farm. As with Cirencester, there's evidence to support the 100% Green Council via these REGOs that I was just talking about, which are the proof of generation by the farm. And these REGOs are used by a lot of different companies for that kind of proof.
Yes, yes, interesting. Thank you. Now, just going back to some of the earlier initiatives involving renewable energy in the local borough. Now, do you think there are any future opportunities to develop your strategy by investing in more renewable energy initiatives which are based locally in Warrington? I think you've mentioned things like solar forecourts, which I think you said grid server involved in. Do you see this is something you could introduce into the local borough? Are there any other thoughts you have in terms of the greening of the energy supply locally?
Yes, sure. We're always looking for potential sites in Warrington for renewable energy projects. We're at this moment rolling out a large-scale EV charging program right the way across the borough through the government's Levi program. We've identified a number of potential sites for EV forecourt projects, whether developed out by the council or land leased to private developers for EV forecourt development. We've also identified some potential solar farm sites. The main constraint on developing them is the lack of grid connectivity in the town, which can be an extremely costly element of project costs. But we are constantly on the lookout.
Just going back to a point I raised earlier about the money raised by the investment initiative to offset cuts in central government funding. Now, I think according to the Warrington Guardian of 27th of February, the ruling Labour Group's councillor, Dennis Matthews, he's the cabinet member for corporate finance, I believe, mm-hmm. he said yes. that the council can balance its budget, to quote him, despite conservative austerity, because of the council's investment portfolio, and that it added £23 million surplus profit directly to supporting Warrington's most vulnerable residents. This sounds like quite a lot of money can be generated by this investment to, bolster local services. Is that correct, would you say?
I would, yes, absolutely. I think the fact that we've made investments like this has helped enormously over the last 14 years to try to create, we have created a balanced budget every year, because we've had this income to put back into things like children's social care, adult social care. We've managed to keep libraries open in Warrington that have been closed by many, many authorities because of austerity. And I think, had we not had this income from these investments, we wouldn't have been able to do a lot of those things.
Yes, thanks. I'd like to move on now and look at what you're doing and how it might be setting an example for others to follow. Now, I think in some of the literature I've read or on your website, you say that Warrington is leading the way in showing councils how solar and battery storage can help generate a sustainable income to deliver vital public services, meet climate targets with clean energy, and support a low-carbon economy. Can you say how you are communicating your strategy to other local authorities so as to show them the value of what it is you're doing?
Yes, certainly. We've shared our experience and expertise with other local authorities in quite a number of different ways. We've presented at local government seminars and conferences. We've developed case studies, for example, with the Local Government Association that represents councils right the way across the UK, as well as Friends of the Earth and Carbon Copy. We are also part of a number of local authority climate networks and have met individually with several other councils to share our approach. I was only at a conference last week where...
Sorry, the what conference?
It was the Association of Public Service Excellence conference last week, and our head of finance was talking about these investments and how these had worked for Warrington. And we listened to other people's case studies and we put forward our own as well. So it's a good network.
Just picking up on this, how successful do you think Warrington's been in encouraging other local authorities to adopt a similar strategy? For example, are there any examples where other local authorities have spoken to Warrington with a view not just to implementing a similar strategy, but have actually implemented something along the lines that you have?
Yeah, well, we've helped quite a number, actually, around the, you know, the surrounding area. Currently, we're helping a Midlands authority, and they are planning to develop a solar farm.
Can you say who that is? Can you say more about that?
I can't really, because until that goes through their processes for approval, I wouldn't want to put that local authority into a position that they'd agreed to do it before they actually got approval.
Do you actually know of any other local authorities which are actually pursuing similar strategies to your own in respect of renewable energy investments? Have any done as much as you have?
North Ayrshire, for example, has done something very similar. And Cambridge County Council also.
Many solar farms are being proposed or indeed built in rural areas, many of them on productive agricultural land or other greenfield sites. Consequently, not all such facilities are welcomed by local residents. Have you ever had to deal with any objections to your strategy from local residents in respect to the schemes you've invested in? I don't mean the ones in Warrington, but outside your local authority area.
No, I think because we've worked with GridServe, we've managed to identify fairly low quality agricultural land. And so this hasn't caused a problem because it's not really near anybody, certainly not near residential housing. And I think that's helped. And there's lots of research going on at the moment to improve things, improve landscaping. We haven't had this problem, but I think where there have been problems, people who are building and developing these solar farms are looking at landscaping and how they can introduce plants that will help the reflection, like, for example, seagrass, will help the reflection from the panels and at the same time improve, I suppose, how it looks.
More generally, I just want to ask you a couple more general questions before I come to a conclusion now. Recently, I think it was the middle of last year, the UK Warehousing Association, which represents many of the UK companies in with warehouse facilities, it did some research which showed their members could generate significant income by installing solar PV systems on the roofs of their warehouses. Do you have a strategy in Warrington of encouraging companies to install rooftop solar on their commercial roof space?
I, I think we take the view that we would encourage anybody to install solar if they can. We've actually completed a commercial solar array installation on a large warehouse. It's called Plastic Omnium, but it was a really complicated exercise. The main constraint was occupiers are usually leaseholders, and they have a fixed end date to the lease. So there's some reluctance to invest in solar installations if the anticipated operational life of the array goes past the end date of the lease. The companies we looked at were happy to take a discount of the power generated from the array, but for someone else to install it.
Right, right. You wouldn't perhaps deal directly with the owner of the building rather than the leaseholder.
Well, I think the problem with a lot of these warehouses is that that's the way that land is held. You'd very rarely find the freehold owner dealing with local authorities or anybody else about these things. It's, you know, there's reasonably long leaseholds, so it's left to the leaseholders to deal with.
Yeah, sure. Now, following on from this, I assume Warrington, like anywhere else in this country, has got a lot of cars, and there's a lot of demand for car parking. And have you, you know, presumably you get a number of applications every year for people who want to turn brownfield land or something within the borough into a car park, even if it's only for a relatively short period of time. Do you have a policy of making the installation of PV panels a precondition of a car park being developed? I ask this because I believe in France they are now making it a condition of any company that wants to build a car park. They're making it a condition that they install solar panels above the car parking spaces, and then they actually use the energy generated to provide power for EVs which are using those parking spaces.
Yeah, and that's probably a good way forward, although I think planning regulations in the UK may make that a little bit more difficult. We're actually looking at installing solar panels, canopies linked to EV charging on some of our surface car parks. Going forward, if there are any new car parks built in Warrington, solar canopies linked to EV charging would be considered a requirement. The main issue, as I think I said before, in Warrington for this sort of thing is the poor grid connectivity in the town. So if there was an excessive use, it would affect people using these EV chargers on every single car park. But I think, you know, if we want people to use and buy electric cars, the main consideration is range. And the reason for that consideration about range is because of the number of EV chargers. So, you know, I think I said earlier that we have an EV charging strategy now in Warrington, and we're looking at the moment at housing and car parks. The housing, though, would be where people are not able to provide their own EV charging points. So flats, for example, terraced housing, where we can try to help with putting chargers close to those properties so that people can use them.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm going to draw to a conclusion now. So, Councillor Janet Henshaw, thank you very much for your time. Most appreciated.
Thank you, Ian, and thank you for your time too.